You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase.
Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker. And this week, we have another stories from the season to share with you. This week, I've got the guys from Team Bad Decision, who you might know. They've been on a couple of times. Scott Daniels and Travis Greenwood. Always a pleasure to have them on. These guys are super funny and entertaining. This time, they're joined by Adam Podleski from Rugged Stitching. And these guys all collectively went together and went up to Alaska and did some Sitka blacktail hunting as well as some fishing. And it just sounded like an absolutely amazing trip. So I brought them on to tell the story, and that's their stories from the season. Before we get into that, quick word from the sponsors, and then we'll jump into the show here with Team Bad Decision and Rugged Stitching.
The Backcountry Rookies Podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. The University of Elk Hunting is the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can get. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Go Hunt Insider. Go Hunt is always working hard to add value for the insiders. On top of draw odds, unit statistics and analysis, insider points in the Go Hunt gear shop, and a ton of more features, now Go Hunt is adding real 3D maps to Insider at no additional cost. Adding these maps has solved my problems of having three screens up on my computer all the time, running Insider, Google Earth, and a mapping software. Now I got them all in one place, collected right there in Go Hunt Insider. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in gear shop credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. Vortex Optics. Vortex designs, engineers, and produces a complete line of premium sport optics and accessories. And did you know that Vortex is now in the apparel game? So check them out, Vortex Apparel. Vortex is dedicating to providing top quality customer service and products to the users, and backs it all up with their lifetime VIP warranty. Use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off of apparel on the Vortex website. Now let's get to the show. Apparently it's recording. All right, we're good. So let me quick intro on you guys. Adam, I'll let you go first, and then I'll just work around. Scott, you'll be able to go, and then Travis, you guys are old hats at this game, so it should be easy. And then, like I said, we'll talk a little bit about getting to Alaska preparation very briefly, and then we'll jump in, and I'm just going to let you guys rip on talking about the hunt and having fun. And hey, so did you get pizzas and beer delivered by the airplane?
No, they did offer to bring us alcohol if we needed it, but we we're over provisioners, so we did not really have a problem. We spent, I think.
Yeah, there's a picture in here.
We're gonna wait because it's worth knowing how much money we spent on alcohol for the hunt.
There's a picture in here of your shopping cart. Adam posted one in here. This article.
That didn't count. You certainly weren't lacking.
Is that a box of wine?
Two boxes of wine.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Provisions, good.
Scott felt compelled on the fog delay to augment that.
I got two more six packs of heavy hitters.
Good. All right, here we go. Backcountry Rookies podcast with Team Bad Decision and Adam Podleski from Rugged Stitching. I'll do a very quick intro. This is the stories from the season. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. If you guys remember how stories from the season went, I really just turned the mic over to the guys that went on the hunt, and I'm just going to let them tell their story. However, this one is a little bit interesting. It's a Sitka blacktail hunt, and before I turn it over and just let them rip, we're going to talk a little bit about the logistics of getting to Alaska and sort of packing and getting ready for that. So with all of that said, Adam Podleski, why don't you introduce yourself? You haven't been on the show before. Say hi to everybody.
How's it going, guys? Adam Podleski, as mentioned, I have a small side business after hours that I do custom sewing for guys, building backpacks and pouches and whatnot. And that's originally how I ran into Scott. I sewed him a pack, and then Travis wanted one, Scott wanted version two, and somewhere along the lines they said, hey, you want to go to Alaska? Sure.
And there you go. That's how it, holy matrimony, right? Just like that. Scott, why don't you take a minute and reintroduce yourself?
I'm Scott Daniels, live in Washington State, you know, dad, husband, adventure seeker, you know, trying to go on an Alaskan hunt for quite a few years. And so these guys were kind enough to partner up with me and make it happen.
Very good. Travis?
Travis Greenwood, the most valuable member of the team, the mastermind, bringing the greatest skills, shooting, and species evaluation to the table. These guys rode my coattails all the way through the hunt. And,
no doubt. No doubt.
But they were good. They were good teammates up there. So
good. As long as they brought you a cold beer every now and then while you were holding the heavy load, you're good. You're good. All right.
We drank the beers while he was sleeping.
There you go. There you go. And box wine. Well, we'll get into the shopping cart full of booze here in just a minute. Perks of flying in. So let's get into that. Oddly enough, I recorded with Scott and Travis before they left to go on the hunt. And we talked a lot about the logistics stuff, but I'm going to scrap that show because now we have Adam on with us. Originally, I didn't know Adam was going hunting with Scott and Travis. So now we got the whole crew here, and I kind of want to start over from the beginning and talk about – let's start with tag acquisition, I guess. Or where do you guys want to start? Where did it start for you?
Well, I'll start in there. The very first thing was Travis really wants a North American Deer Slam. And so that's kind of where this started. And I'm always up for an adventure. So we started looking at this and initially started in the Southeast Alaska. And I don't remember why we were hung up there. I don't know. I've been to Ketchikan a few times, and so I'm somewhat familiar with it.
I think Prince of Wales had just been – I think we had saw some guys. What was the one guy who went on the Prince of Wales hunt?
Oh, Shane's, yeah.
Shane. We saw another guy went to Prince of Wales, and he had – and his crew had done really well on POW, and so that was just kind of where our jumping off point started.
Yeah. So then we looked at how many people we need to do this hunt, you know, and it makes sense to do it out of a beaver because we don't want to hike up from the beach or anything. So then you're looking at three guys. So we started thinking about who we'd want to add to the team, you know.
Let me just check here. My phone must be broken or something. I didn't get a call on that.
Yeah. We didn't even know you back then, Chad. This all started two years ago. You know?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Long planning process.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
So then we I guess Adam was the one that said, why Southeast? Why not Kodiak? And we were like, yeah, why not Kodiak? So, but
what was your, what was your lure to Kodiak, Adam?
They wanted to do Alpine on Prince of Wales, but you know, you get a weather coming in and you're screwed. And, you know, I've always seen all the Kodiak reports and it's chock full of deer and just seemed like a great opportunity there. And I couldn't imagine the commercial flights were more than 100 or two more. And we looked into it and then turns out Scott even knew somebody on the island. So that's handy.
Somebody yeah. relatively important to yeah. our hunt.
Luckily, he finally came to get us.
Okay, so there's good. There's story there, too. That's good. That's good. All right, so you settled on Kodiak then. I'm sure there's a whole lot to that, but we, you know, we're not going to spend 3 or 4 hours recording. I think you're probably glad you did, looking at the results of the hunt. Let's talk about, okay, let's talk about tags then. Or which, where do you want to go next from there? Do you want to go to tags or do you want to go to flights and planning and prep?
Tags, tags is a piece are available. Of cake. You just yeah. order them and, you know, a couple of days later they come in. You have to get your general license, however many metal tags you want. And then you also have to file for a hunt permit as well. So there's like three things you have to do. And that's
where do you do all of that? If you're going to do it.
Yeah, just on the Alaska's Fish and Game website. It's not okay. very well laid out, to be honest, compared to some of the other states, but, you know, we've
better than
out.
Some.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, so it's not bad. Tags are easy though.
Like carrying all your harvest tags with you, even though you're only going to use two. Like you print off, because you can kill, I think, total up to 6 deer, I think, depending on your allotment. And you have to carry all 6 harvest tags with you, which are the equivalent of what you're actually notching for your month and your day. And you have to carry all 6 on them, even though you're only going to kill 2. So there's some weird rules like that Alaska requires. And we were just trying to make sure all of our T's were crossed and I's were dotted, so we didn't get any trouble doing on something stupid. So
yeah. Is there, I'm sure there's a rule book that's readily available on that Alaska website and you read through it like any other state pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There's some vague things that came into play later in the trip too.
Okay.
Oh good. Boy.
We'll get down into that then too. Okay. Let's talk about travel. Cause I think that was one thing that you guys were, that took a little bit to plan that out and get the hop flights and all the crap set up. Right.
Fly Alaskan Air. They go all the way to Kodiak and they're very generous on return baggage. It's $100 for your third plus bag. Doesn't matter if it's got to be under 100 pounds. It can be oversized up to a certain size. So it's just way easiest.
Well, yeah, commercial is easy. I mean, I use mileage and I mean, I think we talked about in the last episode too, but not only fly Alaska, but get an Alaska Airlines credit card. Yeah. Because then you get your first or your second or your first check bag for free. And then I think when you sign up, you actually get enough miles to pay for your whole commercial flight. Is that right, Adam? Or did you have to pay a little bit? Or?
Oh, I was worried it was going to sell out. This was before COVID hit. So I could have waited. Yeah. But this will just pay for the fishing trip next year.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I remember 5,000 miles and it cost me $12 for my commercial flight round trip.
Okay. That's right. I remembered we talked about that and I actually, who the heck, I was recording with somebody the other day and they said exactly the same thing. Get an Alaska credit card and start racking up the miles and it's going to pay for the flight. So
it's not just flights to Alaska either. I mean, if you're starting to look into flying to hunt, you don't really fly that much for work or family recreation. It can pay dividends. I mean, just that first check bag, that's, you know, because otherwise you're looking at doubling your baggage costs for every trip that you're flying with a like a rifle or a bow case.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the big thing is there's also that whole companion fare thing. So, you know, I'll try and drag some folks up there when we go fishing next year. I'll just keep pitching that fishing next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the companion fly? What or whatever you just said, what's that?
You buy one ticket, get the second for $50 or something like that.
I think it's 100, but yeah.
Is it 100 now? Yeah.
Well, either way, that's still a pretty smoking deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's easy to get flights then, and tags are easy. So what's the hang up, I guess? Why do people, I always thought it was hard to get to Alaska. I hear a lot of people say it's hard.
It takes time.
Time. That's the issue.
You're eating hunt days on logistical travel.
Let's talk time then. When did you guys leave Seattle? Or Adam, you're flying from Colorado, right? When did you leave Colorado? How did all that work?
I left my house, I think, at like 5 a.m. or something. Friday. And I think we landed, and that's mountain time, and we landed in Kodiak, I think, like, was it 4 p.m., and that's two-hour time change later, so yeah. 6 p.m., so it was 13 hours of travel for me.
Well, that's
and then
bad.
We didn't get into the field until, what, 4 p.m. on Saturday?
Well, there was a fog delay, but yes.
Right, but that's Alaska travel.
Right. And Scott and I talked about that a lot previously. It was that, you know, when we were planning this whole trip, is that you have to put those fog delays in your mind. You have to build them into your trip a little bit, because we got really lucky. I mean, we had 4 hours delay the whole time. Then we got picked up on time, you know,
early.
Yeah, we got picked up early. Yeah. We were still hustling gear down to the lake by the time we got picked up. And, you know, it's a crapshoot. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, they say a lot of times when you book your Alaska travel to try to book the flex ticket on the back end in case you get stuck for 3 or 4 days with a fog delay, and that kind of stuff happens. It just didn't happen to really us, except for a little bit on the front end.
So what have you heard horror stories of? I'll ask you, Scott, I guess I need to kind of start asking questions to people. Scott, have you heard, was there any horror stories or anything like that about people losing entire hunts because of fog delays and just terrible flights and whatnot?
Yeah, you know, when we were sitting at Eric's house that evening after we got into Kodiak, waiting for his amazing wife to cook us homemade pizzas, he was telling us horror stories of guys that spent their whole allotted hunt window sitting at the hangar office because they couldn't get them out, or they weren't tagged out yet, and they said, hey, weather's coming, but they chose to keep hunting, and then they were stuck an extra 3 or 4 days because they couldn't get to them. And
wow. Yeah, so you got to really plan that in, that or have a work or a boss or somebody that's pretty reasonable to let you get hung up somewhere for a few days. Oh. Yeah. Interesting. Well, so that's pretty cool, Dan. So flying in, and you got lucky because you knew the guy with the airplane when you got there, right?
Yeah. So we actually, I think we met in fifth grade. And he moved up there about 11 years ago and started flying for them. And then has since kind of worked his way up and is a bit of a plane baron now. Doing quite well for himself up there, and it was pretty awesome having him take care of us like that.
Yeah. Did you guys try to book any other small planes or little hops or anything like that before you found out about him, or was that kind of the go-to? Well, like, I'm just curious how hard it is to book somebody to fly you in and out.
It's really easy.
There's a couple other small outfits in town. A lot of them are like, you know, it's a guy and his plane, which is cool because you know exactly who you're flying with. You know, there's one other guy that's really popular that everyone likes because he's been there for 30 years or 35 years or whatever. And it's not a competitive thing for these pilots up there. Like everyone helps each other out and they're all friends. And but beyond that, the nice thing about going with the outfit that we went with is they have quite a few pilots and quite a few planes in the air. So when you run into something like, hey, it's going to be warm tomorrow and we've got 3 deer in camp, can you come get them? They're like, oh, yeah, we're dropping some hunters off. It's only like 20 minutes from you. We'll drop down on the lake and pick it up and throw it in the freezer.
Yeah, it was 4 deer, Scott.
Oh, okay.
Well, either way, deer. They're hauling out deer, right? I'm a little bummed out. On the first show that we did, you guys talked about having pizza and beer flown in delivery by aircraft. And I'm a little
bummed out
because that didn't happen.
It worked out better to get pizza handmade at Eric's house the night before. His wife was a saint. Like, she just – we just were sleeping. We had blow-up mattress on their living room, and she was sitting there making pizza. And, you know, they were – you know, Eric had a whole cooler full of beer and it was, we had a really good time. They were fantastic hosts.
Don't forget our new guy that we're going to be try to become friends with, that gave us pizza at the brewery.
And yeah, everybody in Alaska is nice. The pizza had closed.
Apparently everybody in Alaska eats pizza all the time. is what it seems like to me.
Or just shares it with us.
There's a pizza shop and a brewery there, so it's pretty much that's all you get. But.
That's it. Yeah, well, okay. I could think of worse things. Yeah. There's a juice bar and a kale factory down the street, and that's all we've got in town.
You're in the wrong town.
That's not going to work. Yeah. Well, cool. All right. So it sounds like it was pretty easy to get in, pretty easy to get out. Well, we haven't talked about getting out yet, but to get out of Kodiak, I mean, and fly out and, you know, get to where you wanted to go. I kind of want to talk about grocery lists. I'm looking at this, some of these pictures, so not carrying stuff in a backpack looks like it makes for more refreshments in camp.
Yes. And
perfect timing opening that beer too, Scott.
They don't all have to be concentrated refreshments either. So you can have a mix.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so alcohol is expensive on Kodiak. That was one thing that we noticed. I mean, a 30 pack of cheap beer was $30 instead of, you know, 22, and fifths were 35 or 40 bucks compared to 20 or 25. And so, but I think we ended up, what was our total bill? It was like 350. Somewhere in there,
something.
We were all close to $100 or more on alcohol. I think I was at like $125 or something like that.
Just swipe that Alaskan card, man. Swipe that Alaskan card.
Yeah, for the fishing trip next year, right?
Exactly. That's
all for the fishing trip. Yeah. Yep. Very good. Well, I think it's cool, man. It sounds like you guys had an absolute blast. I could probably ask questions all night, but I kind of just want to hear about the hunt and. Let's talk about it. So I'm going to let you guys talk. Just let it rip. Let's talk about day one. Let's start there. You guys flew in, you got dropped off. What happened next?
Well, we kind of planned our trip hoping that we could get in, early enough to put together. We were supposed to fly out at 10 a.m., 50-minute flight, hour flight, whatever. We were hoping to get a good hunt together that evening, and that didn't end up being the case. You know, it was relatively late. In the afternoon we got in, and then we had to haul our 500-600 pounds of cargo a little ways because there was no flat spaces large enough, which kind of plays into some of your gear choices. The ground, well, you know, looks pretty decent. Record,
before you keep going, I found the flat spot, and I may have told them that it was only 100 yards up the hill.
Which is about a quarter mile.
So it may have been a slight exaggeration on distance. Anyway, sorry, Scott.
Well, and then Travis was kind enough to, we had our bags packed, kind of in like a quick day hunt mode. So that if we did get on the ground and saw some bucks, we could just leave our gear and go chase them. Well, Travis was kind enough to pack our packs up to where we were going to put the tent immediately and leave all our big duffels and random cases of beer and food and shit. So we had to like arm load carry all these in like five loads instead of using these giant heavy haul freighter packs that we have.
Hey, I was well excited, done. Man. I was ready
well
to hunt.
Done. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good.
I give Travis credit. I think he carried twice as much as everybody. I was setting up
but
the tent.
But he didn't put the tent up.
That's fine. The trade-off. I said, you guys put the tent up. I will be the grunt man carrying all the stuff up from the beach.
So. What tent did you guys take? What kind of tent?
The Terrarium 8-Man Seek Teepee.
It's a custom Alaska edition.
All right. I got to hear more about that, I think. Let's hear about it.
Well, we condensation. Yeah. Condensation. That's the long and short of it. But as we first got there, Adam, he uses a stove in it in Colorado. So he's got a couple little pinholes that don't really matter that much. And so he's got some Tenacious tape out or whatever it is. And he's patching up these little pinholes. Little did we know the entire thing was going to be so fucking wet that it could have had holes everywhere in it. It wouldn't have made any difference.
Oh, that's funny. No stove, I guess. What was the temperature up there when you got for you?
Not bad. That's
45 to 65.
I'd say 51 to 68.
Yeah, I don't even think it got below 50 because otherwise a lot of the rain would have caused us some hypothermic problems probably. But it was not cold enough that we were moving when wet and fine.
Yeah.
We were wet pretty much. We were in our – that's the most – I've owned that rain gear for, 7 years now. And that was the most I've ever used that rain gear in one trip. It was like 80% of the time I was in my rain gear.
Wow.
So And sometimes yeah, getting out of your rain gear. I mean, the weather changes. It's like freaking Colorado, man. It was like, I was butchering my deer.
That was nothing like Colorado.
Yeah, I don't remember ever being that wet in Colorado.
But the quick
weather switches. I've only worn my rain gear once in Colorado.
I mean, the weather would change fast all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've also never spent that much time in rain gear other than fishing.
Yeah. Huh. What'd you wear under it? Because rain gear gets hot. So are you just running like base layer or underwear?
Well, that was the toss up. Like, you know, is it warm enough out that we can just get soaking wet and not wear the rain gear? Or is it cold enough we need to put the rain gear on because there's a breeze and it's starting to chill?
We should clarify the rain gear wasn't usually for rain. It was going through the 4 to 6 feet tall ferns that were soaking wet.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sucks. That's like hunting.
And Oregon. The 8 to 10 foot.
Or Washington, I guess.
No, it's so much worse.
Oregon was bad.
This was physically the worst hunt I've ever. I came out of this hunt. I'm still. My ankle is still swollen. I'm sure Adam's is still a little bit swollen if you look close enough. I mean,
mine healed pretty good.
The brush was so big. Bad. It was so bad.
Huh. Anyway, now, I'm sorry. I interrupted with the question again. So we're on day one. Travis is hauling all the gear. You guys are setting up the tent. Where do we go from there?
We basically just got set up and started glassing from camp because it was, what, like 4 p.m.?
Yeah.
And we were seeing some does. We didn't think we saw any bucks, but hindsight, maybe if we were better on the big spotters, some of them might have been bucks. But nothing got us to say, let's run out the door. We said, let's get our packs ready and hit in the a.m.
Well, let's be honest here. We'd gone to lunch. We've been doing some drinking.
Maybe.
Before we got on the
flight. Yeah. Land. You got to have one when you hit the ground, right? Uh-huh. You got to get one going there. Yeah, I could see that. Let's hit in the a.m.
We're kind of trying to get a lay of the land, too. I mean.
Right. You don't want to blow out country you haven't even looked at yet.
Yeah.
Right. No.
Yeah.
I want to say, kind of blown past it a little bit, but everybody was saying that the moment that plane leaves off the lake is a little bit surreal. And I have to second that. That was pretty cool. I mean, we were a ways from Kodiak City in the middle of nowhere by ourselves. And that lake just that plane just takes off and it's around the corner and all of a sudden you're by yourself. And that was pretty neat. I mean,
I'll say that was one of the moments that I'd been looking forward to for a long, long time,
right,
to have that experience.
Did it meet your expectation? Did you think
it was? It did. But yeah. The craziest thing about it was how quickly it was gone. Like the feeling, the thought, and just moving on, and it just feeling like a regular hunting trip despite that.
Hmm. What'd you think, Adam?
I didn't hear banjo, so it was all good.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah, you never want to hear the banjo in way deep country like that.
Oh, it was great. You know, it took off. We got set up, settled in, and, you know, we were going to be there. It was time to hunt.
So talk about glassing from camp then. That's a pretty cool. That had to be a pretty neat experience to just look at country that you've never, ever seen before. Travis, what'd you think about that?
It was pretty convenient. I mean, you know, the first night, I think what we didn't see a lot of deer the first night, though. And I think, I don't know about the other two guys, but you could see a lot of country from camp. And I think we saw like 6 does from camp. And I was a little bit nervous that maybe we were in the wrong area. We had been hearing all these rumors about how terrible the winter kill was, and they're still saying it's between, you know, 40% and 70%, depending on who you talk to. The winter kill up there in Kodiak was bad. Now, granted, they had a huge population. They had like 5 mild winters in a row, so 70% of a really good population is better than 70% of a bad population, obviously. And so, but I had some creeping doubts sneaking in. I mean, you know our story. It's not like we haven't screwed up a million times
made a bad decision or two.
Left animals on the board and things like that. And
well, and this one had so much extra pressure on the home front. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
You're spending – this is substantially more budget, and everyone's expecting you to not come home and be like, yeah, it was tough. The weather was poor. We didn't really see any deer.
Right. Yeah, my wife would not have been pleased if I dropped, you know, a couple thousand dollars to go on a vacation without her after, especially after Mexico got canceled. So,
yeah,
but it was cool. I mean, it was kind of nice classing from camp. But I mean, you know, kind of going. I mean, I talked to a guy that said that they landed, and the first evening they saw 17 bucks from camp. And so we never saw a buck from camp the first night, if I remember right.
And we identified as a buck.
Right. I think that we were on deer 35 plus before we found a buck.
Yep. Yep.
That's awesome, though, just to be able to set up camp and sit there and glass that many deer. That's pretty cool. I don't
we
care.
We had chairs, too, Chad. Chairs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I'm looking chairs. At the pictures.
We made a poor choice of chairs.
We really did. That's later in the hunt.
Well, all right then. We'll get that. We'll travel down that road. So go ahead, you guys. Crashed out, went to bed, got up, ready to get after it. Adam, how did day two go? Or hunt day one, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
We split in three directions. You know, just the thing you want to do in brown bear country. And I picked the wrong direction, that's for sure. We later found out the way I went was some of the worst brush of everything. And I kept trying to gain away from the lake. And that was also a bad idea. I busted through a ton of brush and saw the first brown bear at like 250 yards. And it just was cruising the other way. I was like, oh, great. It's gone. And I made it up to a saddle and I was just soaked. Cause I don't think I had my rain gear on at the time or it wetted through. No, I wetted through. I had my side zippers open and didn't close them. And I just, everything was wet. So I just dumped everything out and spread everything out because there was a breeze in the saddle and took my boots off. And we were doing a radio check in like 10 minutes and sat down and threw my binos up and immediately was looking at a buck down the ridge for me. And it's like, do I want to go after it right now? I'm all wet. I'm trying to dry out. And they came on the radio and I explained where it was after we checked in, and Travis says, yeah, I can see it too. And so now I had somebody goading me on. So time to go hunt a buck.
Yeah. How'd it go?
Went well. First buck.
You had him down by about what? 12:30?
Yeah. No, about 12. I think, I got to him about 12:40.
That's what it was. It was like you spotted him at like 11:15, had him down by like 12, but then it took you almost longer to get to him than it did to make your stock.
Yeah. So I had to go up the ridge and, you know, I was kind of thinking this was like mule deer. So, I was out of sight on the ridge and just came over the ridge and I was coming up behind a big rock and, you know, I got set up and, I think I was out about 580, but the wind was buffeting me a little bit. So I went sliding down this heather on my belly with my rifle and everything and, got to 525 and I was out of the wind there and felt really, really stable. So I got set up and hindsight, I didn't need to do any of this because you can get a lot closer to him. We figured out, but he was bedded laying away from me and cracked a shot. He stood up, walked around a set of alders and never came out. And Travis could see him on the other side of the alders and was like, he just dumped, man. But then I had to get over there. So I went down the ridge and Travis kind of was navigating me down the correct color of vegetation, which will come into the story later. There's three colors and you only want one color if you can for walking. Got me down to it and then they signed off. Right about then I opened my pack and realized I left all my game bags at camp. So that sucked. I got that butchered up. Unfortunately I was put in a garbage bag cause that's all I had. And then that started ripping cause it wasn't even a contractor one. It was just something stuffed in the corner of my pack. I was kind of pissed. I was so disorganized that day. But that made it hard cause the slope going back up was like a 45 degree angle. And I happened to shoot a fairly big, crypto something or other they call them. They basically have no testicles. So he was, fairly big and fat. And, it was about at the threshold of what I can carry steady state, but not steady state up a 45 degree slope. So I didn't make a lot of progress in the next couple hours and I couldn't ferry loads very well because it was just meat in my pack basically. And I cried on the radio for Scott to come get me. And he was kind enough to start heading my way and bring me some water. And I started arm load carrying my rifle and optics and everything like that just to break up the load. And then I was able to get moving a little bit better, but Scott came and picked me up and then I ate shit on the way back and blew out my ankle pretty good. And I wanted, like hell.
I wanted to ask about that. You guys both have blown out ankles. So we found out how you got yours. Travis, I'm sure we'll hear about yours in a minute.
Yeah, about 4 hours later.
Yeah. So how far away were you guys from each other? Go ahead, Scott.
Technically, I think you injured yourself first, Travis.
Yeah, you did.
No, I injured myself packing.
Yeah, you did.
With my you were in camp. I radioed you before Adam hurt himself.
Oh, maybe.
I got hurt like a half mile from camp. I was just in the spirit world following Scott bull moosing through the brush for me, and all of a sudden I was face down in the ferns with a nice pain in my ankle and down one trekking bull.
Day one.
It can only go up from here, right?
And I have to say, it was pretty cool. Like, you know, I just gotten to the top of the ridge, and we did that radio check, and Adam's talking about these $2, and, you know, they're right on this corner ridge over there, and I look up, and I could see them immediately. I mean, they were plain as day. I feel like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't spend enough time up, you know, chasing deer in August or whatever in Washington, but those Sitka really stand out against the vegetation, and I mean they're plain as day. It is not difficult to spot those deer when they're
it's just summer coat because even the bucks out here in the
it's that deep green, and it was pretty neat being able to watch him put that whole stock together from, I think I was at 1800 yards, and so I got to watch this whole thing come in from like a mile away, and it was pretty neat. I mean, to watch that whole deal, watch him sneak up the ridge, watch him come down, watch him make the shot, and anyways, it was pretty cool. So
they look like, just looking at the pictures, obviously I haven't been there, but they kind of look like they're about the color of an antelope. Are they that red?
Yeah. This time of year, they're like that. And, you know, anybody that's been elk hunting, you know, when you just look a mile away and you see a dot that doesn't belong, you're like, hey, there's an elk. And then you throw out the binos. There was that going on. Whenever the sun was out, these deer would just pop.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just say, oh, there's a deer over there. Let me get some optics on to see what it is.
They still show up in the flat rain light, but when the sun hits them, they, even my colorblind ass, they pop.
So I wanted to ask, how far away, Scott, were you when you got radioed?
So I was, so Travis was on the top of the ridge. I'd spotted some. So Travis and I went up the same ridge, and then we split. I spotted a group of deer down in the bottom and wanted to watch them because there was a nice buck with them. So I wanted to see what they were doing. Travis, he went up to the top. And so I only had sporadic contact with Adam during all this. So it was kind of like I could only hear one end of the conversation half the time, whereas Travis and Adam had contact most of the day, I think, during while all this was going on.
But he never understood when I said I don't have game bags. He was surprised when I got back to camp and told him that.
Well, when once you had found your deer, I bailed off, and I had turned my radio off and then was gone, and then I was off on my own adventure. So
I guess it's time for you to check in then.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's hear about Travis's day one adventure.
So my first buck was a general grade A cluster, as only Travis can do. So I departed after watching Adam put that stock together, and I continued up the ridge line. And one of the keys, I think, that in retrospect on Kodiak, we got to figure it out eventually, is if you can hit the ridges, the walking's not as bad. And so, I mean, you can get some little rollers and stuff like that, but the footing is significantly better up on the ridge lines, and it's a little bit easier. You can poke into all the basins, and, you know, you can find a lot of deer. I mean, later on, you'll see Adam, you know, Adam was chasing a different deer when he ended up shooting his last deer. And I think that's probably not an uncommon strategy, I suppose. So I continued up around and I was spotting deer all the way down the ridge. I still hadn't seen a buck besides Adam. And I had two tags going. We all had two tags going into this hunt, and kind of my general plan was to shoot, for lack of a better purpose, the first available buck that wasn't a spike that I saw, and then I could take the pressure off myself, and I could go after, you know, a bigger deer. And so when I came up over the hill and I looked down and I see there was a doe feeding in a little meadow, and there was a buck tucked up into the in the upper corner, and he was kind of quartered away from me, quartered to me, and I got down into a position, and I think the shot ended up being 440 yards. Again, same thing that Adam said. We found this out later. These deer just do not see people like down in the lower 48, and they don't tend to bust before. I mean, what would you guys say? I mean, you're pretty good up to 300 yards at least. I mean, some of the deer, especially the younger deer, were busting like way. I mean, Scott had a deer give him like 19 opportunities at 40, like 40 yards, you know, and
he jumped into the cooler.
He jumped into the cooler, right? And so I shot
with a 200 grain hand.
I made a bad shot on this buck, and I had shot him up. Basically, it came in just kind of midsection and went right through his guts and blew out through his back quarter. And then I ended up, you know, shooting him again when he came down. He was standing there, and I put a kill shot into him at about 320. And unfortunately, I lost a lot of meat on that buck, most of which I discovered in camp because it was raining. When I was trying, the rain was coming when I was butchering, and I was trying to butcher him pretty quick and make sure I kept my evidence of sex and whatnot. And I missed all of the gut shot on the rear quarter. I didn't see it on the backside for whatever reason. And I ended up losing that whole rear quarter to gut shot. I mean, it was pretty bad. And that was a big bummer just because those deer don't have a lot of meat on them anyways. And so it was kind of a downer when I got back to camp and I realized that quarter was probably going to be lost.
Let's back up here a second. This is a preparation teaching moment. Right. It's warm weather. You thought that you had enough game bags because you put two mule deer in them.
Right. Yeah. So I brought what I considered to be the appropriate amount of game bags for two deer, which is what we did in Montana, which I brought four quarter bags. And some bone bags. Yeah, bone bags. I mean, two smaller bags for back straps and tenderloins. And I would have doubled that in retrospect. And that's what Scott had done. And
you could have isolated that quarter a little bit better.
Right. Well, and I did isolate that quarter when I got back to camp, and I didn't lose any other meat off that deer. But I don't know. I don't know if that quarter was savable in retrospect. I mean, it had blown through the guts, and it had blown through the rear femur, and it exploded basically stomach bile all over the meat and bone fragments on there. It was pretty smoked. But I also had to keep that quarter too, because that was the quarter I ended up putting my evidence of sex on. And so that was, you know, and we were trying to be very careful. And in Alaska, you got to take all the rib meat. You have to take all the neck meat. I mean, you got to clean those deer significantly better, where in other states, you're not required to take some of the rib meat and neck meat and stuff like that. We're trying to be really careful on that kind of stuff as well. So I got,
what'd you do with it? Just take it down to the river or something and keep it cold? Or just, what'd you do with that quarter?
I kept it in a separate game bag by itself, and then just had it hung in camp just like with everything else. I mean, and okay. I had done a panic hack job at camp and was trying to – I was trying to save the quarter, and I was trying to cut some of the gut shot meat out. And it wasn't until we got back to town when we were doing our final butchering.
He says, "Hey, can I borrow a knife?" and takes my knife.
Okay.
And then just starts hacking meat off this quarter and flinging it all around camp. And me and Scott are looking at each other like, "What the fuck is he doing?"
I had a couple of course.
This is bear country.
Happened, okay, so.
Oh, that's cool.
Panic mode. But so I will say, so the pack back.
We got to test that bear fence somehow, right? We'll just throw this meat all around.
He was throwing it in like at least a 70, 80 degree arc.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny.
But I will say, so on the way back, I learned the most valuable lesson in Kodiak, which is that there are no shortcuts through the brush. I was up on the ridge and I could see the tent. I had a full deer in my pack, plus all my day gear and stuff. And I was looking down, I could see the tent. And I'm like, well, and I even ranged it, and it was at like 1700 yards, like right at a mile. And I'm like, okay, I think I have a path. I was looking down the hillside. I'm like, I only have a little bit of alders to cut through right here. And for me to go 300 yards, it took me almost 2 hours.
Holy cow.
And it was a freaking, I remember, and I had, that's where I had my really bad fall. I rolled my left ankle pretty bad, and I was using a Kafaro gun bearer on my pack. And so the gun was, you know, slung under my, underneath my right armpit. And when I fell, the burl on my tripod smashed my wrist against the ground too. And so my wrist was all jacked up. My ankle's jacked up. I'm like stuck in these alders. And I had to have a little chat with myself. I mean, like I usually do when I'm in these bad situations, because I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what am I going to throw my pack and my gun down and head down? I mean, you only have one option, is to keep going. And so just toughed it out and got back to camp and ended up beating Scott and Adam. And that's how I ended up having a couple of beers before they ended up getting back, which is why I was making such panicked cutting motions with my quarter. So
you were preparing the Fox deterrent mechanism.
Right. Yeah, we did. That's actually the biggest fear danger to your antlers in Alaska, because apparently the foxes will run off with your antlers. Huh. And so I devised what I considered a very ingenious, which is why I consider myself the most valuable member of the team, ploy to keep that from happening.
You did a shitty job of executing the idea I planted.
So basically,
it's an interpretation. That's what it was.
I looped a bunch of beer cans through their tab, tied them to the antlers, and then tied them to one of the chairs, so that if a fox grabbed the antlers, it would give us a warning system that something was running off with the antlers. So,
but good thing you had all those beer cans.
Right. So I was drinking those beer cans in order to do the warning system. So it was kind of a sacrifice I felt like I was making for the group.
Yeah. I could see that. That was an excellent choice.
Hashtag
MVP. I like it.
Later in the trip, it was not sloppy camp. It was a minefield for the fox that we were laying around those antlers.
So I have some video of this camp that I got to say, Scott, I was impressed with your Backcountry Cribs video that you sent.
We were unimpressed with your response. We were sitting back at
the
Best Western laughing our ass off, and Chad gives us a dud response.
I did. Where was I? I think, wasn't like my mom was here or something, and I was out entertaining.
You must have been so busy that you just half-assedly watched it and then went back to your life.
You know what it was? So I didn't even have the volume on. I just was like, there's some camp. Okay, that looks cool. All right, I'm going to watch that later, because I know, coming from Scott, I know it needs more attention. And then I kept thinking, there's got to be a trick in there somewhere. Like there's somebody's balls are hanging out somewhere. There's something in this video that needs to be paid attention to. So,
just the words, man. Just the words.
Yeah. So for all those listening, there was no balls, luckily. And it's actually a pretty interesting video, because it's quite the camp. So anyway, Scott, let's hear about your first encounter.
So my first day, like I said, Travis and I, we kind of headed up the same ridge. We fought through the alder and the ferns and the shit, and we got – started to get into the alpine where the travel was getting easy. And right about then I spotted a group of deer down in the bottom, and there was a nice buck with them. And I'm like, they're on the move, but they were going to bed somewhere. So I figured I'd sit down and watch them. I didn't have anything better to do. So I sat down and watched them, and I'd pan around and glass a little bit and kept finding other deer and other little pockets. And I'm starting to kind of, I guess, figure out where these deer are hanging out in the landscape. So then I spot a couple other bucks. And one of them is on the ridge, like right behind our camp. And so I range across, and it's like 2,500 yards from where I'm at or something. I couldn't range it. I had to measure it on the map. I just did a little click measurement on the topo map, but I could range the tent from where I was at, and it was at like 1,800. So I'm like, shit, he's not that far behind camp. I think I'm going to drop down, go back to camp, top up on supplies, and then try and put a game plan together and stalk this buck tonight. And so we were doing radio checks on the hour, and I'd been in camp for about 5-10 minutes, just gotten my boot off, kind of drying my feet out, that kind of thing. And Adam radioed me kind of in a bad way, needing game bags, out of water, needing a snack. So I dumped my pack.
Keep in mind, I had made it, I think, 300 yards up the hill by that point after getting body checked by Alder and whatnot with my pack. And
this is our 4 o'clock radio check.
I wasn't doing good.
So I dumped my pack, grabbed his game bags, a couple snacks for myself, and started heading to meet him. And, you know, that was about the end of the night. I think we made it back to camp about 8:30, quarter to nine, pretty well smoked.
Me more than you, but yeah.
Well, it should be noted too, that it stays light till, you could probably hunt till close to 11 o'clock.
I'd say 11:30.
Yeah, I mean, you could hunt.
I don't know what the legal versus sunset was, but I think sunsets were something like officially at like 10:30, but man, it didn't get dark till at least midnight.
That's pretty cool. Like, so you just called it that night then? Travis, you had your buck.
Yeah, I was
Adam
done.
Had a buck. Yeah.
I was in a pretty bad way. Adam was in a bad way. So we were
I was tired and wet.
So. Gotcha. Well, all right then. So it's time to pack it in. What'd you guys do for food in the evenings and stuff? Did you take good food with you, or were you doing?
No, we didn't want to bring a stove or do dishes.
Okay. So just freeze-dried stuff or not even that? Or you just do
We were doing freeze-dried.
We had a shitload of other like snack-type foods too, like jerky and chips and ramen. And Adam brought a quart of sriracha.
All the necessities.
Well, we went to Walmart hungry.
And then Adam had to go to the store to get snacks. And I was like, okay, well, I'll get some more. So I ended up getting like a whole freaking thing of Oreos and beef links and more chips, which I didn't eat any of this stuff. I didn't eat any of the food I brought. I just ate chips and Oreos the whole time.
But. I literally subsisted on chips, jerky, Cheez-Its, and Pekin Mountain House.
Yeah. And box wine.
Box wine. Fuck yeah.
It's not camp unless you got box wine.
Not our camp, at least.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right, so day two, I guess. I mean, we'll speed it up. Let's talk about dinner.
Because it comes into play. We decided that night, peak refuel, chicken Alfredos for closers.
I think it's one of my favorites.
It's awesome.
You got to start saving it for only days you kill something.
Well, I found a new favorite, man. In fact, I have one right here. I just found this stuff the other day. It is jalapeno cheddar biscuits and herbed sausage gravy. Dude, it is so freaking good.
Taking notes right now.
I'm down to kill multiple animals on a trip, so.
There you go. So multiple peak refuels, I guess. Yeah. I do have a chicken Alfredo packed for a bear hunt in 2 weeks. Maybe that's the lucky. Maybe
you might be going hungry if you don't.
Kill a bear.
Yeah. Is this where we talk about that part?
I don't know. I don't know if that's podcast appropriate.
I could put explicit on any podcast I need to.
Travis had extra motivation to kill.
Scott said he was feeling a little lonely away from his wife, and said if I didn't kill something that day, that it was going to be my turn. You know, so
yeah.
So I was killing the first little
everything. Everything in the way of a bullet gets so put
that,
down.
That joke continued to run, and every time somebody said it, somebody killed that day. And so everybody's a little motivated to,
not
take one
right.
for the team.
Right, so, exactly. Yeah. There you go. Not take one for the team. That's probably the most appropriate way you could put that if you wanted to.
But
Scott didn't kill that night, so sorry, bud.
No, he had told that to Travis, but we got back to camp and I was a walking zombie, and Scott turns to me and said, Travis just didn't want to get it tonight. And that just had me laughing. You know, it took me out of my spirit world. And then I said, well, I guess you're on the line tomorrow. So off to bed we went, and it was a shitty morning the next day and my ankle was blown up anyway. So I was like, I got one deer down. I'm going to take a rest day, or at least looks like I'm going to take a rest day. And it was raining, and I think about noon it broke and you guys bailed out of there, but I just hung by camp and tried to dry the terrarium out and dry my gear out and stuff like that.
I tried to go about 10. I was going to go back up.
Oh yeah.
I was going to go after the buck I'd seen the day before, looking at the country that he was in, and my one day of experience of how these deer are living, I was like, ah, he's not going far, which I stand by. After, you know, a week of watching these deer. But I started heading up to go after him. And this is where learning the terrain started to come in. He was almost completely unapproachable. I mean, not impossible, but probably harder than I wanted to work.
You needed to go up and around. You can't go through the alders.
It would have, I mean, he was, like I said, you know, maybe 1,700 yards from camp, but it was probably a 5 mile stalk to get on him with any sort of efficiency. So it started raining again. I came back to the tent, hung out for a little bit, and then Travis and I, we went and put a hunt together. We started walking down valley, kind of staying low, staying on the game trails, out of the brush, just kind of, you know, seeing what we could jump up, you know, hunting a third direction from where we'd gone the first day. And we started seeing some deer, and then we started seeing deer everywhere. And we sat down on this little canyon that was a nice little travel corridor, and we're glassing up into the high basins, and Travis spots a real nice deer, nice mature frame. He was just a big fork on the left side, and then he was split on the G2 on the right side with nice eye guards. And I was like, you know, close to his ear's width, I was like, yeah, I'll go after him. That's a real nice buck. Let's go. So he was about 1,800 yards out, and we put a nice stalk together, about 2.5 hours or so for us to get across the bottom of the basin, up the hill, through some brush, and then up like borderline avalanche chutes. And on the way, we thought we were going to get busted by this little two-point. We first saw him at about 160. And he's just staring holes through us. And we're like, shit, he's going to bust. He's going to clear everything out of there. But we just kind of held, and he just kind of went back to feeding and walked away. So we're like, okay, so we're back on the move. We get up to the edge of the saddle where we're gonna split up, and I'm going to drop out of sight and start really putting the sneak on. And that buck's looking at us again. And he's at like 280 right now. But he's just mellow. So I just go my own way, and I drop down the opposite side of the mountain, and I come around, and I'm going to sneak up and over the top. And if everything goes as planned, this buck is bedded behind this little brush patch, this, you know, like 8-10 foot high alder patch. And I should be able to shoot him at like 40 feet. And I close on the rung brush patch, and I'm above the brush patch, and he's below me. And we do like a Scooby-Doo circle, where he slips out the bottom the way I just come from, and I go around and slip into the bottom where he just was.
And I'm watching the whole thing from like 300 yards.
And I can't see anything.
Waving my arms at him, and I'm like, he's right there, he's right there. It's, you know, I'm not screaming, obviously, but Scott's like, what? And I'm like, put your foot out, you know.
There's like 8 to 10 foot brush, but only like 20 feet between this buck and I.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
So Travis could have shot him like right underneath me. And we'd had a conversation about this. I was like, if he busts, just shoot him. Like, we didn't come up this mountain to go home empty handed.
But it wasn't a safe shot for me. I mean, I didn't feel comfortable making that. Scott was right there.
Yeah, that's a tough call. Yeah.
And I'm not, there's deer everywhere. I'm not going to risk a shooting accident.
Right.
And he wasn't really quite the buck I wanted for my second tag. He was a really good first tag buck. And I didn't feel comfortable shooting that deer.
So I circle around, and that small 2-point that's been haunting me is sitting there at 42 yards. And I'm like, I didn't come up this damn mountain to go down it completely empty. There's two of us. It'll be fine. We're going to, I need to get on the board. He's going to be delicious. And you know, we're starting to get a little, I mean, not short on days, but like we're looking at, you know, needing to kill a buck every day for the rest of the trip. And so I shoot him, he goes down, and then Travis starts waving his arms at me. I glass back at him to kind of to see if he saw anything that I didn't, and he's waving me towards him like a crazy person. So I start walking towards him, and I look up, and he's waving me hard. So I start like trotting, and he's waving me more. So I'm like running now. I'm running across this side hill, and I get over to him, and I'm winded, and I'm dying. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, a monster just stood up when you shot, and he was bedded in some thick shit. But I didn't want to take the shot because if he dies in his bed, there's a 0% chance of us finding him, especially by myself. Travis?
I was kind of liking your version because I know my own. And so I hadn't actually heard you tell that story before. So it's pretty good. So Scott shoots. And let me go back. I don't think we've talked about this, Scott. I was very worried that because when that buck stood up, my fear, because the buck that he was after initially had kind of snuck down in the middle. And I was worried that buck had snuck out the bottom. And so when I saw that deer, my first thought was that it was that buck that you were chasing. And I was like, shit. I'm like, that's the buck Scott was chasing, you know, da, da, da. And then I get the spotter on it and I get my phone scope on it. And it is very clear that this is not the same buck. And I'm ranging it and my hands are going like this. I'm shaking, you know, and I'm trying to wave Scott. He's not moving fast enough for me. And so I'm watching this deer and right when Scott gets to me, I turn back and the deer is gone in my phone scope. I look back to the phone screen. I looked up for 1 second, looked back and he's gone. And I'm like, shit. I'm like, that was a really big buck. And I'm willing to just sit on this deer for a little bit. And so I go back and I'm showing Scott the phone scope videos. And I'm like, and Scott's like, wow, that's a really good, you know, that's a really good deer. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to give him 20 minutes. And if he doesn't stand back up, I'll go over and help you with your buck and we'll get out. I don't want to spend all night while you've got a deer down over here. And there's deer everywhere. And so Scott literally puts his pack on, clips his belt in, and that buck stands back up. And so I ranged him at 254 is I think what I ran, 255, somewhere in that range. And I got on him and in typical Scott
team fashion, bad decision engaged.
Yeah, right. Let's kill our second deer miles from camp, like, up a nasty hillside.
4 miles and 4 hours from camp.
You know? And so I was kind of having flashbacks to my 17 bear when Scott was like, nah, he's not that big, don't shoot him, you know, so I pulled the trigger and there's no way I'm gonna miss it 250 yards. It's just not gonna happen. And my initial thought was that I just smoked it. And I'm like, in fact, I even said that on the video. And I'm like, oh, I smoked it. But he went right, he went left, and then he started running uphill.
Hard and, uphill.
And Scott's like, I don't know. He doesn't really look hit. And so finally he kind of stumbled a little bit and Scott thought his shoulder was broken and he was stumbling in and out of view. And I took one more shot and missed, thankfully, because I don't want to waste any more meat on him. And then he came up and he just tipped straight back over. But unfortunately, he tipped over out of sight.
Well, and so what had happened is he went up into he climbed up out of the brush that he'd been in, up and took like 2 steps into a nice little alpine meadow, and then tipped backwards behind the 4 foot brush that he'd been bedded in. But still in the meadow.
Which was very nice of him. It was very convenient. So
he was thinking of you.
So then it was kind of cool because then I told Scott, I'm like, look, I'm going to load up all my stuff. I'm going to go over there. If he's dead and he's right there, you'll see me. And then we'll go to your buck. We'll get all your pictures done, get him processed. Then we'll go to my buck and we'll do the same thing. And then we'll get out of here. And so I went over this is probably Scott's time to tell. I mean, you know, it was kind of cool for you watching from a distance.
So I'm still in the original shooting spot. So right at that 250, 260 mark. And I put Travis in the phone scope as he walks down this meadow and start recording as he walks up on this thing. And you get kind of the full impact of him walking up on this deer. And it's a really impressive deer. It's a big non-typical, you know, it went like, it's like a 8x4. It's got all these crazy extra points and, you know, it's like scores in the mid-90s. You know, so it's a really, not only is it a pretty impressive Sitka deer in general, but it's a unique buck. It's not a buck you've seen anything like, you know, like it's just nuts. And so when he walks up, you could just see the emotion and how like floored he is to walk up and grab onto this thing. And I watched all that through the phone scope. So it was pretty cool for me.
Yeah, it was the nicest deer, you know, per species that I've ever killed. And it was a pretty cool experience to walk up on that sucker and see him dead right there and not really caring about how far we had to go pack him out of camp. I had no regrets about pulling that trigger. And it was something I'll never forget for the rest of my life. I mean, it was pretty awesome. So.
And so now we are here, team bad decision, both of us with a whole quarters in, you know, bone in quarters buck, having to pack these things down this steep ass goat hill. And I am thinking back to that story about when Becca Moffitt compound fractured her leg like 20 miles from where we're at and had to get life flighted because she slipped in the wet grass. And
yeah.
And it's raining, right? And it started raining. Bam. Oh,
you're skipping. After the shot, Scott ran up and radioed me. So I saddled up and started heading their way. But they went back over the hill and there was a miscommunication exactly where they were. And then I couldn't find them on the radios. And it was getting a couple hours from dark and I was a few miles in there. So I was going to start heading back. And
well, see, this is perfect. Miscommunication.
Yeah.
Thank you for interjecting yourself.
Yeah. That's good. Okay. So now the team bad decision is fully engaged and you got all this. Talk about the pack out.
Well, I'll say it wasn't the worst.
Yeah.
Before you start, it was, this is the first time on a hunt that I have ever had to tape my ankles repeatedly. And I tape my ankles before going downhill just because I'd already rolled my ankle at this point. I don't know if you've ever had ankle problems or anything, Chad, but, when I start rolling my ankles, it gets easier to roll them every time and they stretch out or whatever happens, my tendons, my ankles, they start rolling all the time. And I was getting kind of concerned about taking a whole deer out. And this chute was not, it was not steep, a little double negative there. And, I was concerned that I was going to roll my ankle pretty badly.
I would say it was steep, steep.
It was steep, steep. And I take both my ankles up for that. And it made a huge difference. And I mean, I haven't had to tape my ankles in a long time. Probably since I was, you know, playing basketball 10 years ago, pickup league, you know, I mean, I just don't have to do it anymore. And it was a little sketch. And so go ahead, Scott, you can take over. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, we got both the bucks loaded up and we side-hilled for a bit and then we got to the ridge, made contact with Adam, kind of walked him into where we planned to meet in the bottom. And then we took off down the worst of it, and got down to the bottom of that. From the top, you can always find a better route, you know? So we found the smallest section of alders that needed crashed and just plowed through it. And it wasn't that bad. Then coming back, you know, on the flat, we made much better time than we thought we would, especially being able to give Adam a quarter each and, you know, taking some of the load off. I don't know what time, if Travis and I would have had to solo those things all the way back, I don't know what time we would have got in, but we ended up walking into camp at like 10:30 PM. So a long day, but it was still totally light out, which is the craziest thing.
That's good. So you ended up linking up with Adam then, I guess.
Yeah.
Right at the bottom of the steep stuff.
So I had actually gone a half mile too far down the valley and then I was on my way back and they just happened to come over the top. And, you know, they're like, we see you. And I was like, okay, where do you want me to go? And then they met up with me and yeah, I grabbed a quarter or a record each and, you know, my ankle was a little jacked from the day before and I hadn't taped it. So I would have preferred to help more, but I was ginger footing it. But yeah, we made it back in and watching you guys.
Good in that last. Too.
Yeah, I brought water too.
We were out of water, which was a running theme this whole trip. Was
yeah, like you'd think in Alaska
no
you
creeks,
just
so.
Well, there's no creeks where we didn't want to walk or where we right, wanted right. to walk. There was right. water where we didn't want to be.
Right.
Well, and there's nothing up high. Like, yeah. you know, all the creeks and the seeps and stuff, they all kind of stopped about 500 feet below where you wanted to be hunting.
Yeah.
Could you lift your camera up a little bit, Scott?
Yeah.
There you go.
So just, yeah, we motored in and you guys were walking zombies a little bit and, you know, then went back to the theme of fox prevention.
Yeah. Get extra weight now, though.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just
to speed it up.
We got in the bottom. I was going to say in the bottom, we got into this, a new type of terrain where it was like this ultra spongy. And Travis and I had gotten into it a little bit on the way out, but it was no big deal. You know, we were packed super light. But we got kind of trapped in this, like, looked like a decent meadow to travel in. But it was like this ultra spongy grass that, like, it was the amount of effort that post-holing takes to walk on flat ground. So that really, really, at least me, I feel like Travis was feeling the way. It almost really fucked us. It was like probably the last, yeah, you know, the last quarter of the way back to camp where we're already getting a little spent, and then this hits and really started sapping our strength.
You didn't really mention your buck too much. What'd you think about your buck, Scott?
Oh, he was miniature. Okay. He was just.
Oh, he was a little 2-point. You said right, yeah, the one that yeah, kept messing with you. Yeah.
He was
right.
Miniature. He gave me a shot at 42 yards and let me get a rest at 42 yards.
And Scott was worried about back at camp.
Yes.
Yeah, he had been warned.
That had been put down that day.
Yeah.
That he was up on
something had to die.
So, you know.
Yeah, something had to die. Or that X-Ped was going to get tore up, man, that's for sure. Yeah.
So I ate a wise chicken Alfredo that night because he was a pretty dinker little buck. And I don't know that I'll buy another one of those again. I don't think I'll buy one of those.
Yeah.
But I did have chicken Alfredo that night. So then the next day, it was everything. By the time we got back to camp that night, everything was wet. The tent is soaked. Our packs are soaked. I think Travis and Adam are both on their second pair of soaked boots.
Correct. So this is pro tip. Scott didn't bother mentioning it to either one of us, and he was a genius. We're flying in. He brought in a couple rolls of paper towel and would pack his boots at night and it would suck all the water out. And we didn't realize what he was doing until days into the trip. And we felt like
last day. Hey, why are your boots so dry? Why are you wearing two pairs of gloves, Lloyd? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Here, borrow mine. Yeah.
So anybody going to Alaska on an airplane, bring paper towels.
Yeah. That's funny.
We missed my new injury too. I kind of forgot that happened on Sunday night. So night two, I killed my first buck and Adam killed his first buck and we're sitting in camp and we're a little tuned up, you know, and I'm sitting there in my underwear making my dinner and I grabbed the Adam had made the water in his giant pot and is it an MSR pot, is that what it is, right?
Yeah, it was a MSR reactor with the 1.8 liter pot on it.
And so it was full of water. I was first up on the dinner. And so I start pouring it in and the boiling water leaks down onto my leg. And I'm trying not to panic as I'm burning because I have this huge thing of boiling water. I don't want to make it any worse. So I have to slowly put the water down, make sure my dinner doesn't fall over. And by the time I start wiping the water off, I've got two really bad second degree burns on my leg, probably the size of half dollars.
I think I saw a picture of that. Did you post that on Instagram or Facebook something?
Yep. You probably just sent it to your personal text message.
maybe.
I was a little worried about it. Scott told me to quit being a wuss. And
then you started to find out things you didn't know about me.
Yeah, I found out that Scott is a he's a grade 7 burn victim. You know, so just that's a whole other podcast, I guess.
Yeah, but, it's most definitely. I don't even know if we want to go down that road.
But it was no. they were basically open wounds the whole week. And I just kept them. I just did my best, keep them clean, and they were fine. And by the time I got home, I went and got some of that.
Travis clean.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah,
there's a question for Adam.
Yeah, yeah. So for the listeners not watching this, there was these air quotes, and it was Travis clean. So I'm kind of curious as what Travis clean versus regular clean is.
Well, I didn't.
I haven't checked to see if the Best Western charged us extra when we checked out.
Oh my God, they would be well within their right.
That was not my fault though.
Oh, yeah,
it's not your fault.
Just the random stuff thrown all over the bathroom, including sunflower seeds. We're like, why are there sunflower seeds on the bathroom floor?
Dude,
they spilled.
It looked like a mouse.
My seeds bitter fell over. It's not my fault.
It looked like a mouse had been in our bathroom, and it was just Travis after a shower.
Really? I should have got you guys a discount because there was mice in our room. So.
And so is this the Adam, is this the pictures I'm looking at on the story that you wrote where there's like a huge Sikh tent hanging off the wall?
Oh man,
stuff hanging in the
closet.
We were
drying everything in that room. We didn't let the room service in for the 3 days we were there because especially the first 12 hours, we'd leave that room and come back and it just, you got punched in the face. It stunk so bad. We had the fan on high and the window open the entire time we were there. And after 12 hours of drying gear, and we also used the washing machines to wash all our bloody hunting clothes, I'd say it went down to about 25%, but there was still always a little something in there.
It definitely slapped you, but part of that was just Travis's gear.
Get out of here. There's no way, man.
So Travis is a slob. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Hey, so we are way over an hour for sure.
Oh my God.
I know you guys got a couple of more great bucks.
Yeah, we'll smash cut at day 3. We had a meat haul come get us. It was supposed to get there at 1, got there at 3. It was sunny. We dried all our gear, saw some bucks from camp and vowed to just keep drinking beer and not chase them and dry our gear. And then
got mad at our pilot for the first time.
Shout out Jer Bear.
Yeah. Yeah, he asked one of the pilots to remind him of his name, and he got a little attitude. It was funny. then day 4, we started out dry.
Earliest we left camp yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't call us fresh, but we were dry and got up into that ridge pass where Travis was, and we were seeing bucks right away, and I split off going for one like a mile down. And as I was running along the back and I was almost to where I needed to be, I just looked off to the side of the far ridge and there was a decent buck right there. So I cruised over the ridge so I could get radio line with Travis and said, hey, what did those ones look like again? Because I see one right here. And he says, who cares? They're in the bushes. Shoot that one. So, okay. Went back over, shot it. And I was a little disappointed because 225, I would have thought it'd just crumple on me. And, you know, he started moving away, tried shooting one when he was facing away uphill, so kind of like a upper spine. And then he turned and was headed for some alders. And I could see the dot on his flank. It was a little further back in the lungs. And threw one more at him, and he was disappearing in the alders. And I just did a Hail Mary at him because I didn't want to lose him. And watched, and he never came out of those alders. So then I popped over, called Travis, said, hey, I just shot one. Bring Scott up here. He can go after that first buck I just went after, and I'm going to be on the backside of this ridge. Went back, grabbed my gear, took 3 steps, and all of a sudden a deer comes flying into the basin, which I thought was weird. And then a couple seconds.
A different deer.
Yeah, different deer. A couple seconds later, all of a sudden 2 brown bears come flying in the basin too. And I'm like, this just changed everything. So ran back over the base or the ridge and said, okay guys, I need you up here fast because 2 bears just came in and I don't want to go down these alders unless someone's watching and letting me know what the hell's going on. And so I just sat down and I was watching and they came into the basin and then they just started coming right up the basin right at me. My wind or my scent was blowing directly at them. Mind you, I had bloody pants from a couple days prior. And at 200 yards, they're still coming right at me, and they haven't veered for my deer yet. So I was starting to feel a little creeped out because I had a can of bear spray and a bolt action rifle, kind of wishing I had that Glock that was back in the tent at about that point. And so I started heading up the ridge, and they stood and they're looking at me, and then they start paralleling me as I went up the ridge. And that was the direction my deer was, but backwards a little bit. And so I started huffing it up, and right about then Travis came over and they had disappeared in the bushes, and we backtracked, and they had finally figured out my deer was there. And so that was a goner. But I was just glad I didn't have a sow and a yearling stalking me, because it was starting to really feel like that. And then, you know, after we took some video and said, that sucks. And this is where we weren't sure. We had texted Eric, and he responded and said, yeah, that's your tag in Alaska. So that was a bit of a bummer. Mm-hmm. Jumped over the ridge, and Scott got on his deer on the other side.
It's all you, Daniels.
So Travis was convinced that he had one of these bedded bucks in the brush patch at like 100 yards. And Adam and I weren't seeing it. And he was like, it's right there. I can see an antler tip. It's him.
I'm not convinced that he wasn't there and snuck away, because these deer are just like Western Washington Blacktail.
Scott literally walked up to that, Travis.
It was steep heather. I rode that thing down like a kiddie slide right on my ass cheek with my gun in my hand to like 42 yards into this little hole and proned out and was just picking this grid apart. Like I hoping that I'm wrong and that Travis has this thing dialed, and I was really hoping to keep my two kill shots under 100 yards combined. And there was just nothing there. And so at that time I start glassing around, because there was 4 or 5 deer in this basin that we'd seen earlier. And they're there. I mean, they haven't crossed.
There's 4 or 5 bucks in this basin.
Right. There's more deer than that, but bucks. And they haven't crossed any of these big opens where you see them leave the country. So I'm trying to pick one out, glass around, and I see a really nice frame buck down in the bottom. And I've just got my binos at this point. My pack is still up on the ridge. And so I mentioned it in the radio. Adam puts him in the 15s and goes, oh yeah, that's a nice frame buck. You should go after him. And it's like, yeah, I should. So he's about 880 when I spot him, but just about that in vertical as well. So I dropped down about 700 feet going after him, just my rifle and my binos. And I get to like 300 on him, and he's starting to go into an alder patch. He was feeding in a nice grassy bottom, and the angle is just poor. There's just a lot of brush. So I pop up and I take off again, and I get to this next little nice little pocket that I can tuck into, and I've got him at like 214, but he's just going into the brush, and all I can see is his head and his antlers, and all his vitals are covered up. I can't even quite tell what his body position is. So I'm waiting. I'm laying down on the gun, you know, eye to the scope, just waiting for him to clear, waiting for something. And he just beds right there, just drops down and just into this thick shit. And all I can see is like an antler tip or an ear. So I end up sitting on him for about 2.5 hours. Travis, at maybe the 2 hour mark, comes down with my pack and his pack.
It should be noted too, that's when I had my scary fall.
What scary fall?
Oh, he crumpled, and you couldn't hear him on the radio, but he said,
"Oh,
I'm hurt."
So could everyone.
Okay. So, I could visually see he didn't look happy. He got moved again.
I had Scott's pack, so I was packing down Scott's pack as well, and I just half-assed it. I had my pack on, and I had Scott's pack over my shoulder, and I had 2 sets of trekking poles in my hand. So I had 4 trekking poles, and I was like, and the walking was not. There was no really alders on the way down. It was just steep, and my ankle rolled, and I heard a snap, and my knee hyperextended at the same time. And I thought I was in a lot of trouble at that point. And at that point, I kind of waited a couple of minutes, and I was trying to figure out how bad it was. And I tested my ankle, and it turned out it was okay. My knee was okay. And then I took an opportunity, and I packed Scott's pack down real tight, put his trekking poles away, strapped everything to my pack, and then did it right. And then it was okay. But It was pretty scary. That was probably the scariest fall I had of the whole trip. So I rolled my ankle at this point 27 times over the course of the trip, and I thought this was the one that was going to put me down. But anyways, back to Scott.
So Travis gets there, and Adam's still up on the ridge watching all this, and there's still a couple bucks down below us that he tries to stalk, and Travis and he are trying to figure out, like, where those bucks were. While I'm still sitting on this deer, and finally, after 2.5 hours, a couple does pop up, and they start feeding towards the patch of timber that this buck is in. And Travis and I look at each other, and we're like, oh, shit, bitch is going to get him killed. So they start walking right into the patch that he was in, and he's passed out. Like, I haven't seen him in a while. Like, I could see an ear or an antler, but he's down low enough that he's curled up in there and racked out, because I can't see him at all. And these does, they walk like right up into his patch, and he bolts out of there like a bucking horse out of the chutes, like all four legs straight, and he lands out in the open and is just, you know, you could tell he's just distraught, like, what just woke me up? Like, I can't be in the thick with whatever just woke me up. And I'm on him because we saw it coming, and I'm ready. I'm at like 214, and Travis goes, I got him in the scope, boom. And you know, he was by far the buck that I went there for. I was super happy with him.
Yeah, that's the one. That's a beautiful buck, man.
Yeah, that big typical
solid. Yeah, that's a nice buck. They're all great bucks, but the that one was the one. There's a cool picture. Adam has a cool picture on here of it. So, yeah.
Adam, send that link out when you get a chance.
Sure. They may have regretted it, but they said, "Hey, we got this one down here. We'll just meet you at the
saddle
of the bottom that they were going to walk out." And eventually, they came up out of the. Well, Travis did, and then Travis said, "Scott's not good." So I met Scott, grabbed some weight, and we all stumbled home and had.
In the meantime, the weather cut loose again.
Yeah. Oh, we had
dawn rain gear.
20-mile-an-hour winds, rain. Yeah.
But we made it back, and, you know, at that point, we had reached and said, we're done. Come get us. And, you know, wanted to get out there sooner than later because we had a fishing trip. And, yeah, they came and got us, and we got out of there. It was sweet. And, you know, like we said, we stunk out the Best Western, had to go get burger and beer. Spent the next day butchering over in Eric's yard, and then
which was so cool of him to let us do.
Yeah,
is this the picture of like the picnic table and you guys were out on the street? Yeah. Up, clean a deer on the street.
Nobody bats an eye in Kodiak, by the way.
One guy tried to buy bread from us.
Oh, really? Yeah, that guy was kind of weird, but a lot of other guys swung by and said, "Hey, man, nice deer," you know. And
that's cool.
No, we didn't have any heads with us. They just wanted to hear stories.
And then the fishing trip looks like a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
We won't talk too much about that because of the time, but it looks like you guys caught some killer fish and a whole pile of them.
I didn't have enough time to drink on that trip. That's all I – That's
yeah, seriously.
Just got to drink faster, dude.
Oh, man.
That's an approach. Yeah. On the fishing trip or on the
– On the fishing the whole, trip. We were too busy catching fish to even crack beers.
Yeah, it looks like you caught a freaking pile of them, man.
Yeah, we limited on silvers, didn't really hit on any kings. We had a couple immature kings. We had some we limited on halibut. They weren't huge ones. Captain's convinced that Travis and I both lost a big one, which we probably did, to be honest. and we caught some gray cod and stuff like that. We both, or at least I'm saying, I'll definitely go fish again, but I'd do 2 days and just say, let's keep stacking it, you know. We ended up.
And more whitefish would have been nice.
Yeah. Well, it'd basically be like, hey, let's go slam halibut and rockfish and everything for the first day and then salmon at the second day or vice versa, something like that.
Right.
Definitely had a lot of fresh silvers. That was nice, but a little bit more halibut would have been cool.
So all in all, as we wrap this thing up, would you guys recommend that trip?
Oh, yeah.
12 out of 10. Much better than 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 2020 sucks.
Best thing to happen in 2020.
Yeah.
By far.
Good. Good, good. That's good to hear, because I think it would be a super cool trip to go up there. And then to top it off with the fishing trip at the end, was that planned, or was that because you – did you guys come out early, or what was
– So it was planned, yeah.
And it was planned on our weather day.
Yeah. If we weren't going to make it out, we were going to lose our deposit, and that was – and we just basically wrote that off. As if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But it was – man, it was really worth it at the end of the day. I mean, we got a ton of fish, and yeah, it was, I mean, especially as we start looking at other species and stuff like that, your cost for that hunt was pretty reasonable. I mean, it really was not that bad. So
there's very few things about that trip that I would change. And as far as, and for Travis and I'm sure he'll agree with me on this. This is the first trip that, like, if you could script it beforehand, it actually like followed it. Like, so many of our trips just go all to hell immediately. This is like the first one that actually read the script.
Cool. Very cool. Last thing we'll touch on is getting the meat home. How did that go?
Alaskan air, again, once you're into bag three, you can have up to 100 pounds. And I think Scott's was at 97 pounds with two deer in there. We took the time, you know, when we had in town to debone all the meat. And I bulk trimmed mine. I got to re-thaw and do the final, like, roast and staking, and well, I don't stake, but you know, I'll cut a backstrap into a couple of pieces and grind and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, taking all the bones out and stuff, it was no problem whatsoever. And unfortunately, we had to ship the fish air cargo after, because we just didn't have enough time. So that's the other thing. If you're gonna fish a few days, give yourself 24 hours extra so that the fish processor can get it all packed and frozen for you, because it's cheaper just to check a 100-pound bag again, Alaskan Air.
Mm-hmm. See, for me, it wouldn't have been, though.
Right. Yeah, I would have been, what, $98 or whatever?
Well, if we would have actually had 2 days of fishing and 100 pounds of fish, then it, you know, could have got there.
But I wouldn't have been able to do it. What am I going to go on, a bag five?
Oh, you're on bag three.
I was on bag three. Mm-hmm. My one haul of fish would have been...
You can do 100 pounds. You can tape 2 50-pound fish boxes together.
Right, but that wouldn't have made 2 days of fishing.
Almost.
Either way, I think the question was, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out getting stuff home. And
yeah,
when we talked about it before, you guys were talking about them fish boxes and taping.
We just bought we bought Rubbermaid totes at Walmart.
Yeah, up there?
Yeah, in Kodiak. Okay. Travis and I bought pretty large ones. Adam bought a smaller one. I think mine and Travis's were $20 for the tote.
Mine was like $7. Just duct taped it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Well, thanks, guys. It sounds like a freaking awesome trip. I'm glad you guys got to do it and COVID didn't dick it all up for you, but super cool. Yeah. Contact information. Let's do all of that all the way around. And we'll start with Travis on the bottom corner there. People want to get in touch with you, ask questions about getting up there and going blacktail or Sitka deer hunting. How do they do it?
You can get me on Facebook, Travis Greenwood, or you can get either Scott or I on Instagram at @ST_teambaddecision. Pretty quick to respond usually. And yeah, I would be happy to help anybody who wanted some, you know, some general line out on this trip. And you know, it's pretty awesome. I mean, I would recommend it to anybody to go do this trip. I mean, it was that cool. So.
Cool. Very cool. Scott, what about you?
Instagram is @adventure_SD, like Scott Daniels, scott.daniels.adventure@gmail. If you want to email me, you know, I'm whatever, man, I'll help you out. Like, it's cool.
Yeah. Cool. Adam, how do people find you?
Yeah. The easiest one, my Instagram, and I got a small Facebook for Rugged Stitching, and then ruggedstitching@gmail.com. Those are the ones I kind of focus on for the hunting contacts.
Gotcha. Cool. And check Rugged Stitching out too, by the way. That Adam's done some work for me. He's helped me out on a couple different projects and turned out fantastic. I've seen the packs that he made for Travis and Scott, or pictures of them, and they look pretty awesome too. And then the last thing we'll do is there's a book out there too, right? You want to talk about that real quick, Travis and Scott? Or Travis, yeah. Why don't you just real quick touch on it?
So we've had a couple people message me about paperbacks, and I think we mentioned before, I'm not doing paperbacks anymore for that. It was just too big of a hassle to ship out of the house, and I'm too busy. And so it's only available now in ebook format from all the major retailers, and it's Team Bad Decision, An Evolutionary Tale, and Backcountry Hunting. And it's basically, for those of you guys that don't know, it's the story of how Scott and I first met and how we first got into backcountry hunting. And I think it has a lot of benefit, especially for new hunters. And I think a lot of experienced hunters will really enjoy some of the stories and whatnot. And so you can get that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, all the major ebook suppliers. So, yep.
If you follow the Facebook page, Travis throws Apple codes out every once in a while, so you can get a free copy too.
Yep.
And just so you know, the way that they met, neither one of them killed that first night. They didn't share a peak refuel, but they shared an air mattress.
So he shared something.
I'll let y'all figure out how that works. But anyway, guys, I appreciate you coming on. I really do. That was cool to hear that story. Let's out of here. We'll shut down the recording and done.